We're going to take your phone calls this hour now with Richard Martini as we talk about It's a Wonderful Afterlife. Share those stories and Amelia Earhart as well. All of that next up on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Richard Martini with us. Richard, I want to shift over for the afterlife for a second, then we'll take some phone calls for you for the rest of this hour. What have you concluded with all the work you've done, all the years you've studied? What have you concluded about the afterlife?
Well, that it's an unusual place to be from. I guess what I've concluded is that just what you were saying earlier, we experience here on the planet such a minimal amount, like the tip of the iceberg of what's going on outside of our lives. And, you know, because we consider ghosts, even the word ghost, we use it like as a pejorative, you know, less than, oh, we're scared by a ghost. Well, those aren't ghosts. Those are living people who are still here hanging around or coming back to communicate with us. So what I've learned is just that the afterlife is this huge, vast, uncharted territory that we're just, you know, now, and because, you know, here shows like yours and the internet, people can share this information and not be burned at the stake.
Are other societies in tune with this too? I would think in some cases they may be more in tune.
You mean like other, well, you know, I must
like
say.
Like Tibetans and
yes,
people like that.
You know, yeah. Yes, like Buddhists. I would say this, that Buddhism as a philosophy, which I've studied, you know, with Robert Thurman, I found it to be the most insightful in this arena of what the nature of reality is, okay? Your daily things of what we think things are, but they're not quite what they are. And that's why Buddhist monks like the movie The Matrix so much, because that's an example of how we can see from a different perspective of how things behave. But when it comes to the afterlife, I must say that all sort of religions that believe in reincarnation have these dogmatic rules. The Tibetan Book of the Dead was based upon one monk's experience, and thousands of monks have written about it, but it was really essentially one person. So remember I was saying, you know, each person's journey is unique to themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've got 7,000 people who say the same things about the afterlife, and it's contrary to what this one monk said. That we are fully conscious between lives. We choose our parents. We choose our lifetimes. We choose who we're going to be, and we try our best to act it out. But we've all signed up for it. And one other thing, it's so important. Every time I've done a session, at some point they ask, am I on the right path? Am I doing the right thing? And the counsel or their guide say, you ask this question every time you come here. And let me just say, you're doing exactly what you signed up for, and you're doing a heck of a job of it. You should give yourself some more credit for getting this far. We're here for a reason. Usually it has to do with compassion or helping
sure.
somebody else. But if you can just honor that for a second, you know, and really try to look around people and see the people that are around you, why they're there, why are you here, what's your journey on the planet, who are you here to help? It's a profound rethink of why we're here.
Sure is. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's have some fun and questions. We'll pick it up, first of all, by going to Wesley in Ocean Grove, New Jersey. Wesley, welcome to the show. You're up with us.
Hi, Wesley.
Listening to you with much interest. I'm a researcher on the same subject that you are. I have maybe three or so things to ask you about. You mentioned someone named Grayson, who was some kind of a researcher with many case studies about the
correct Dr.
experience. Who was this? And also,
yeah,
it sounds to me like your descriptions of the afterlife resemble the world of spirits that Emanuel Swedenborg explains. The world of spirits is not heaven. There are three heavens, the natural, the spiritual, and the celestial above the world of spirits. He also states that there is no reincarnation, and he also gives descriptions of hell. Have you compared your work with Swedenborg? And also, if the afterlife is so much better than this one, why are we coming back to this horrible world of limitations?
Okay, very good.
All right,
so,
you got a whole bunch here, Rich.
Let me just, you know, do my best. And it's based on the research. It's not based on my opinion. But the first question was, who is Dr. Grayson? I suggest just Wikipedia him. Bruce Grayson, he's considered the father of near-death studies. He's had thousands of cases, and the stuff that has been peer-reviewed and scientifically examined, he's the guy who wrote the sort of guidebook on various examinations. And I also highly, highly, highly recommend watching, there's a number of his talks, about, just Google his name, Bruce Grayson, Grayson, and consciousness, and you'll find his talks. There's an hour-long talk that will blow your mind when you listen to it. Now, in terms of a particular scientist that you mentioned, there's quite a few people who have had out-of-body experiences or near-death experiences, or scientists who have gone into deep meditation. You know, we've heard of, I was thinking of the Edgar Cayce, for example. These are people who had their own personal experience with the afterlife, just what I was saying about the Tibetan monk. In his experience, he experienced three levels of heaven, and he didn't experience reincarnation, et cetera, et cetera. That was his experience. I'm comparing it to 7,000 other cases, and in my case, 20 particular, Rich Martini case, 25 people that I've filmed under deep hypnosis who all say the same things about the afterlife, generally. And you'll see in the book, they compare them, you know, each experience where they see their spirit guide. These are common things throughout every experience, but they point to something much richer, and they talk about the process of reincarnation. So it's not my opinion or belief. It's really I'm just reporting. I'm just a reporter in this particular instance. And what was the third one?
Well, the third one we were talking about, of course, you talked about Swedenborg, right?
Yeah.
Swedenborg, actually. But it just has to do with the concept of the afterlife.
And he mentioned there's no reincarnation.
Of reincarnation.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's just, again, I'm just reporting. So it's not a philosophy. I'm not philosophizing about it. It's not a belief system that I have. I am just reporting. And so you line up the reports. And if two people say the same thing, well, that's something to worth looking at. If 10 people say the same thing, then we can actually examine that, just like they did in near-death cases. But here we've got 7,000 cases, as reported by Michael Newton. There's also Dr. Helen Wambaugh, who I mentioned. She wrote about this. Mm-hmm. She's a psychologist who also did deep hypnosis with clients. They said the same things about choosing lifetime, about what month that we enter the fetus. All of these things are examined just like Michael Newton examined them. And now Newton's retired, but he's got 200 people around the world who are doing the same research, talking to people. Pete Smith, I interviewed him. He's the president of the Newton Institute in Australia. Fascinating stories. And what I asked Pete was, like, what's the pattern? Like, what are you learning? And what they're discovering is that people seem to be attracted to the therapist who has had a similar experience to them. Sometimes people, they call them off-world experiences. People who normally incarnate not on Earth, but in other realms or in other planets, they find the hypnotherapist who also has been doing that. And I mentioned there's one case in Flipside, but there's a few in these other books where people claim, again, it's not my opinion, they're claiming that they normally incarnate somewhere else, and then they describe it. And I do forensic, you know, research to find out if that place exists. So
here we go. Sharon's in Crane, Missouri now. Sharon, you're on with Richard Martini. Go ahead.
Hi, Sharon.
Hello, Mr. Martini. I'm going to tell you about two dreams shortly. I don't remember my dreams usually. I had this one 20 years ago or so, one recently. The one 20 years ago, I was in a huge hall, and it was so tall and so long that disappeared almost into mist because it was so huge. And there were millions upon millions upon millions of scrolls that were on these shelves, and they stretched so high and so far, I couldn't see the end of them. And there were people standing around, and this kind of freaked me out a little bit. They were all mm-hmm. wearing these white kind of robe thingies, not more Grecian than anything. They were all happy, and they were all looking at these scrolls. And I knew that I belonged there. I knew as sure as I'm talking to you that I belonged there. My other dream that I just had a few months ago was about a big glowing orb. It was this wonderful, warm, golden color, and it looked like a cross between a sun and a huge sunflower. I mean, I can't even describe the color. And it was just huge. But there was one tiny little spot on the edge that had kind of a small indentation. And I was this tiny little golden piece that matched that, but I was going through space to it, and I fit into that niche perfectly.
That's lovely.
Perfectly.
Sharon, that's a wonderful, those are two wonderful descriptions. And I can, again, only speak to the research, and I'll give you two examples of what that might be. The first one, as I mentioned earlier, seems to be a description about a library. And I've heard the same description of libraries with really these long, huge, where you put books, whatever they're, stacks, that go, for miles. And here's what you can do, is you can examine that with a friend, or, even right now, you can just picture and look around yourself. Who are those people that you're with? Why do you feel so comfortable there? What is that feeling of comfort? What does that mean? You feel like you belong there. We said earlier that idea of being home is so important. That feeling of belonging somewhere. And these stacks seem to appear, and if you examine them, you can actually do this where you can say, well, what's in the stacks? Let me just walk up to them. Let me look at the scrolls. What's in there? You can examine that thing. And the other one reminds me of David Bennett's experience in Voyage of Purpose. I interviewed him, and there's an interview on YouTube where he talks about this, where he had been in this accident while he was on a boat, and he went into this mystical dark place, and then suddenly this great ball of light, pretty much what you're describing, came forward towards him, and he felt unconditional love. And he said, he actually burst into tears while he was telling it to me. He said, because I didn't experience that much in my life, but I could feel it there. And he felt three shards of light break off from this incredible glowing light and come forward to him. And he saw that they were welcoming him, these shards of light. And then it wasn't until years later that David was able to examine it through a between life session and saw that these shards of light were part of his soul group. The other thing that's so interesting about David's story, and the reason Bruce Grayson interviewed him, is because during his near-death experience, he had a future vision. He saw himself in a hospital and a doctor coming in saying, you've got terminal cancer. But he saw that he survived it. So when this incident happened to him 20 years after his near-death experience, he was sitting in the hospital when this doctor came in, and it wasn't his normal doctor, it was somebody else, but it was the guy from the vision. So he recognized him right away. He knew what he was going to say. And then when the doctor said, you've got 6 months to live, you have terminal cancer, he said, you know, doc, I'm sorry, actually, I survived this. I know that I survive it. And the doctor said, no, you don't understand. You're not going to survive this. And, you're in a state of denial. He said, no, I actually know that. And David did survive it, and he wrote about it in his book.
Well, actually, the doctor said, you've got 6 months to live. And the guy said, I can't pay my bill. He says, well, you got another 6 months after that.
Very good, George.
That's a
Very
classic.
Good. I like
That's
that.
A classic.
Excellent.
How did you get Charles Grodin, that great actor, to write the foreword to your first volume?
Well, I've been friends with Chuck for quite some time. Actually, Luana Anders, the actress that had passed away, my dear friend, and she came to visit me. And it was a result of her visit that got me interested in this topic. That's how I wrote Flipside. I remained friends with Charles over the years. He is a firm disbeliever in the afterlife.
Disbeliever.
Disbeliever. It's not a topic he likes to talk about. When I talk about it in the room, he leaves the room. But I called him recently. I was giving a book talk in upstate New York near Bedford Falls, Seneca Falls. And I said, Chuck, can you give me a quote for, you know, the book talk? And he said, you can tell them that I don't believe in the afterlife, but I do believe that you're possibly from another planet. So therefore, it may be true.
You never know.
I worked on his show in the 90s, and he's the godfather to my kids. And he's
that's great. He's a great actor.
Wonderful person.
Ever want to pop him on our show with you one day, let me know.
Oh, that would be... He's got a great book. I'd love for him to come on.
Let's set it up. Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to. That'd be great.
Well, let's go west. DeAndre in Fresno, California. Welcome to the show. DeAndre, go ahead.
How are you doing? First thing I would like to say is dreams are something to marvel at. And I had a question about skeptics, and I also had a question about Earnhardt. The people who were skeptics that you interviewed, you hypnotized them, and if so, did it work? And also on Earnhardt, I wanted to know if you believed her body, her remains were in Saipan, and where is that geographically?
Very good. The first question, people under hypnosis. Now, I, like everybody else, thought that when you're under hypnosis, they snap your fingers and you lose consciousness. But I've learned is that you're never under anything. Hypnosis is exactly like a guided meditation. If you've ever taken a yoga class and somebody says, picture yourself on a boat on a river, and you imagine that. That's identical to what hypnosis is. They spend about an hour doing that and calming you and relaxing you, and then they start to ask a series of questions. Let's go to your first memory. Let's remember what it was like when you were a kid. Let's remember what it was like in the womb. What month did you appear in the womb? And when I first heard somebody ask that question, I thought, how could anybody possibly answer that? But they do. And they always answer after the fourth month. Even in Helen Wambach's research, everyone in her cases answered after the sixth month. That somehow our conscious energy doesn't show up into the human animal until the fourth month. Because, as a number of people say, it's like a fish. There's nothing going on. There's nothing to do. And once they show up in the womb, they say that you can like fly around and see your friends. You're always connected energetically, but you may not actually stay in the womb if you don't want to. If there's a termination of pregnancy, et cetera, we know that happens. Sometimes that's as a result of a contract that you've made with the person you're going to be born to, some part of your life planning session, or other reasons. I'm not diminishing it in any way. I'm just reporting this is what people say. And to the second thing, well, my feeling about all of this research is put it on the table. Science only asks us that things can be replicated. Science only asks us that we can, you know, repeat what people are saying. So I went to Saipan and I asked people, oh, really? She was here? Where was she? And so ultimately they told me the story. And these people, I believe, are telling me the truth. And I believe she was incarcerated there. There's been over 200 people, but I have, you know, a number on camera. And I think she passed away there. Is her body still there? Up until this past week, I was convinced that she had been cremated. So I don't think she was. And there's a report in the Stars and Stripes in 1944 that they dug her body up. I found that in the research. So it's possible that the U.S. forces did dig her up, as reported in the Stars and Stripes in 44. But like I say, just this past week, I met a FBI profiler who does this for a living, missing persons, and she is convinced that that she may still be on Saipan. Yeah. So I don't know.
And Saipan, of course, is in the northwestern Pacific Ocean area, right?
Well, oddly enough, when you land in the Saipan airport, it says, welcome to the United States. It's like Puerto Rico. It's part of our country. It's a territory.
It's a territory.
And but yes.
But it's part of the Mariana Islands, isn't it?
Correct. And it's 2 hours from Japan. And it's filled with tourists from China and Siberia and Japan. They all come there.
Hold on there, Richard. We're going to come back with final calls for you. Hey, it's time. Only got 2.5 more weeks left for the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD to benefit some veterans' charities, where so many people donated all their time and their energy and everything else. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, click the highlight reel. You'll see the CD cover, and you can order it straight on amazon.com. And you'll get it just in time for the holidays. Welcome back with Final Calls. Bruce in Trumansburg, New York is with us. Bruce, you're up on the air with us. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, George. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Bruce.
I never get any sleep because I always get into topics that they never keep
good.
But anyway, the thing that I wanted to mention is that, George, did you ever get the email I sent on the Lord's Prayer?
Yeah, I sure did.
Yeah, and Richard, the interesting thing about that prayer is that it says that we are charged to come to earth to remind others of what is on in heaven is what we should be doing on earth.
That's great.
And I think that's what Jesus Christ taught.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing, the experience is, in 1979, I had a car accident, and I lost my eyesight. I'm totally blind. And months after that, all of a sudden, I started bringing back memories, memories that went back to even before birth.
Cool.
And I also remember not only that, is there are several other people. I don't remember what they really look like, but they were just white. And everything, we're having fun, like I say, and floating through the air together. Mm-hmm. But when I went to my mother's womb, that experience, the immediate experience, was a golden, yellow, bright color, and it was all love and warmth that you can never really forget.
That's great.
Those experiences, all those things came back after my blindness started, and the reason why is that I felt these things before, and I've been here before.
Wow. That's
now
wonderful.
The other.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, who's up? You first, Richard.
Well, I was just going to say, it also relates to the question that the guy answered before, or asked it before. I didn't answer, which was, why do it? Why are we here? And what I say to people is, I'll ask the question: why did you choose your parents? When you start with that question. And it's very difficult for a lot of people because they'll say, what? Are you crazy? I would never choose these people. But when you just keep asking the question again, no, really, why did you choose your parents? You start to see that the good things that they did for you or the bad things they did to you are part of your path and your journey. It's part of what happens and why you're here. And so when stones in your path appear in your path, and as this gentleman said, you know, losing his eyesight, what a difficulty in life. But, of course, I got the great chance to work with Ray Charles in the movie Live It Up. I cast him as God. And what a treat to work with someone who would spend his life generating such love through his music, you know, and sharing what he had learned through his music. And it's these things that are stones in our path, we get these gifts. He's gotten this gift of being able to see himself before he was born, you know, of seeing that this isn't the only place, that this is temporary. I mean, Helen Keller was the person who said, you know, when I pass away, I will have the gift of being able to see. And that appears to be true. You know, once people get into the flip side, they go back to their normal state of being. They get off stage, they put down their props and their costumes and the difficult role that they've chosen, and they're embraced in this incredible, loving, well, or comedic, because your friends are there. They're saying, wow, that was amazing. You did such a fantastic job. So it's just a perspective shift.
Being it sure is.
See that what we perceive, and there's another thing, in this research you find that people that are sort of older souls are the ones who choose the more difficult paths. The older souls feel they can handle it. So they choose a lifetime that's harder, that is filled with stress, that may, you know, really be a lifetime that people normally wouldn't choose, but because they're older, wiser souls, they feel they can handle it, and they can help others, because whatever we do, we're helping others, sharing, you know, our love and our compassion.
All right, Bruce, I know you had another question, but I've got a million calls here, and only got about 12 more minutes left here with Richard, so thank you for your call. First-time caller, Andrew in Eugene, Oregon. Welcome to the show. Andrew, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Good to be on. Yeah, I just had a question. My mom passed away in August on the 10th, and my birthday was the day before on the 9th. No big deal. But we had a great relationship.
That's great.
I feel I've grieved properly. And, you know, I have a big family and it's always been a a joy to be a part of the family. And she appeared in a dream about a month ago. And she didn't look sad or happy. She was just looking at me. Uh-huh. And there was actually another lady with her. It was about 25 or 30. And then something else kind of happened where I had kind of a nightmare. And this was, you know, a few weeks after that. And there was a bunch of, you know, human-like looking things in their form, but their faces were in the shape of a, it's going to sound really odd, but of a cervix, you know, a woman's cervix. And
yeah.
I was just thinking now, hey, am I supposed to interpret that maybe I made a mistake and the lady, you know, that I didn't recognize in my dream might be my daughter or something that I've never met?
Well, that's unusual. I mean, I think when people appear to us in dreams, at least in the research, they're usually, especially when it's a really unusual dream, they're trying to impart something. And almost always the message is, I'm okay. I'm still here, and I'm okay. And I can help you, as that one woman told me. But that idea that they're still around you. Now, when it comes to a nightmare, usually I've found anyway, and you know, who am I? I'm just a filmmaker guy who's been doing research, but I found in nightmares that I'm aware of, they usually have some basis in something my brain is working out. You know, usually it's pizza. Usually it's something I ate. But, you know, so dreams aren't always, you can tell the difference between a dream that has a very powerful sort of life-affirming moment and dreams that are just kind of loopy. But the thing is what I try to impart is don't judge them. Just write it down. It may come to you later on. You know, what's the hurry? It may come to you later on what that meant, and it doesn't have to be defined at this very moment. But just know that your mom came for a visit, and be aware of meditating and asking her questions, because the easiest way to do something like this is really just, it's like picking up a cell phone into the afterlife. Just pick up the phone and ask her a question that you don't know the answer to, and try to be aware if she tries to answer the question. Hopefully she does. She might be busy. You know, there's a lot of things to do in the afterlife. It's not just floating around. There's, you know, tasks. There's things to be done. Anyway.
Richard, what do you think of EVP sounds, electronic voice phenomena?
Very unusual. And I've heard some of the great cases, that guy in Italy. And then, like I say, I was transcribing this session for somebody, and I heard this voice of a guy speaking, you know, clearly. So I think it's, because if it is a frequency, then just by logic, that at some point you would be able to measure that frequency. The trick is, just like the Alan Turing test, you know, is it a person speaking to you? Is it your subconscious speaking to you? And if they're giving you new information, that's key. But you also have to compare it with all of the other research. When people speak to their spirit guides, and a lot of people do, you know, or channel somebody, they're not channeling God. They're channeling their spirit guide. And their spirit guide only has as many lifetimes as they've had, plus their own. So they're not all-knowing. They're not omnipotent. They don't know everything. They may sound like they do, because, of course, it's a voice coming from another place, and you may actually think, well, that's God-like, that thing, that voice that I'm being told things about. But you have to have a grain of salt, which is, they're just telling you their experience. We tend to, you know, give it a lot of import because it's not from here. Mm-hmm. But I found that even spirit guides, they have their own personalities. And sometimes I think, you know, they're annoying, or they can be funny or silly. But we shouldn't take it all so seriously. We're here to have fun. Let's start there. We're here to enjoy. We're here to experience. We're here to taste life. We're here to watch sunsets and watch sunrises and fall in love. That's the experience we're here to do. The rest of it is all icing. The rest of it is all the performance on stage. Ultimately, we're all going to get off stage, and we're all going to take a bow.
Let's go to AJ now in Pompano Beach. Good morning, AJ. You're up with us.
Hi, AJ.
Hey, George. Good morning. Good Hi. Talking to you. I got a statement and a question. I've had in dreams. I've been practicing going back in my dreams, and for years I've been meditating for, you know, more than 30 years.
Great.
I'm getting up there in years now, I'm getting long in the tooth. And I can remember places that I know that they've literally forgotten the names of the people, and forget the places even existed. I've dreamed about Angkor Wat and or in similar places.
Wow.
That either haven't been discovered and that were like brand new. And I still, since I was a little kid, I've been able to see and hear ghosts. I don't know if it goes hand in hand, but for years I sort of shut myself off from it because it just got too much for me.
Right.
But, I have a question. You were talking about being able to choose your parents pre-birth before you get on the merry-go-round once again, so to speak. I have a question. Do you think that when you do that and you cognitively choose your parents, that you can see what's going to happen down the road by any chance?
I from what the research shows and my own experience, I've done four of these between life sessions now, each lifetime has a life planning session. They're not all the same, just like the libraries, but each person has their own version of a life planning session. And you may look at your friends and say, okay, who wants to play my parents in this lifetime? And they go, oh, not me, you know, I'm not gonna be the one. But some people do. And they'll say, and you sort of examine, okay, if I'm born in this town in Chicago, I'm gonna grow up, I'm gonna have these experiences, and this will eventually get me on George Nuri's show. This will be my life journey and my life path. But, you know, but also in terms of your dreams of, you know, floating around and experiencing Angkor Wat and stuff, it's interesting. There's not only this realm, there are other realms. And so even quantum physics tells us that there might be other realms that are sort of, you know, things that are repeated on and on. So maybe people are examining other realms in that they've lived in, maybe previously, or maybe place that they're going to go to. When you're looking at things in etheric form, they may just be all brand new, or you might have been there at that time. And I think, you know, we just need to examine this stuff more. We need to get more research. We need to have more classes and universities talk about it. We need to have people sponsor studies to find out more about it. You know, Paul Allen has spent, I think, $500 million mapping the brain. Well, how about mapping consciousness? Wouldn't that be a wonderful way to find these things out so we can talk about them? So, you know, it's not just me reporting this research, but we have a common language for it.
Do you think the afterlife came before the physical life? I do.
I think, from what I've been told, that we didn't show up on the earth until it was ready for us to show up. And that the actual expansion of the universe and contraction of the universe has happened more than once. So we've been around a long, long time. It's just, if you think of a fruit fly lives 24 hours. So they consider humans as gods, right? They live 80 years, so they must be eternal, immortal. Think of when you're outside of time, maybe lifetimes are like a minute. So maybe a lifetime is like watching a movie. So if you're going to have 1,000 lifetimes, you might have 1,000 movies you're going to experience, or 1,000 plays, or whatever you want to call it, university classes, however it goes. Once you look at it from that perspective, time sort of shrivels. We sense it in our daily, you know, sun coming up, sun going down. But from their perspective, you know, it may be just like a breath of air. It's not that big of a deal for them.
Let's go to Grants Pass, Oregon. Hugh, Mr. Detroit, is with us. Hey, Hugh, thanks for calling.
Hey, Hugh.
Hey, George, my pleasure. Boy, I love your guest tonight. I'm a Christian. I believe in God. And I've been the victim of attempted murder on quite a few occasions.
Wow.
And there's one time that comes into mind. I was taken to a hospital, and I was DOA on arrival. I lived on a farm near McVeigh and Nichols. And that morning, I had taken my children to a doctor, Dr. James Brandenburg, and he died 5 minutes after I left his office with my kids.
He died? And, wow.
Yeah, but they said that he had a heart attack, but he was younger than me, and I think it was the people who killed me, killing him. He was a psychiatrist. And then Judge Hunter Stair, he died at Leavenworth Suffrage Air Force Base not too long from that day either. But when I was dead, George, and your guest. I know there's an afterlife. I instantly found myself outside of the body, and I was in Mexico. I was in Mexico City, and I was in a cave, and there were seven nuns, and what I believe was the devil was standing there with a knife to throw to one of the nuns holding her. And I tried to charge at the devil, but then five of his little minions showed up, and I had to fight these five guys before I could get to the devil. By the time I fought the five guys, he had slit these seven nuns' throats in this cave. And mind you, I was in Utica, Michigan. And instantly, I found myself in Mexico City in a cave.
Right. That was your experience. That was your experience of being in that cave.
Yeah, right? What happened is I hit the devil as hard as I could, but the seven nuns were already dead. He had slit their throats in this cave. And I hit him, and instantly, him and I, it was strange. We all of a sudden, we were in Turkey, and we went down the side of a mountain out of his home. And then he and I, we fought for 2 days.
Well, very good. Well, are you sure it was in this realm? Are you? Is it perhaps in some other realm?
I'm still here.
No, I mean, well, here's the thing. You are still here, and those people that you talked about that are dead, they're not dead. They're not physically on the planet anymore. But because they're not on the planet anymore doesn't mean they're dead.
They're just
still alive.
Somewhere else.
Somewhere else. They're not here. So even those nuns are still alive. Your experience of that existed in that moment, but it doesn't exist now, does it?
Different plane of existence, Richard.
Yes, that's what I
think. Are almost out of time.
No.
Oh, yeah. Well, sorry, Richard. I'm sorry. Hey, by the way, thanks for staying an extra hour with us, too. I appreciate that.
I would stay all night with you, George.
You are.
But my wife would complain.
All right, give us some info, though. Websites, information, how to find you. What can people do?
Actually, I'm calling you from the afterlife, so it's very difficult.
I knew it. I saw the collect call, and I knew we were in trouble.
But I left behind a website called richmartini.com. Easy to find me. The books, It's a Wonderful Afterlife, you can find them on Amazon and CreateSpace. But the website, awonderfulafterlife.com or flipsidethebook.com or flipsidethefilm.com, which Gaim TV has picked up. And thank God people are watching it on Gaim TV. So it was such a treat, George. I know we get cut off at the end, but it's such a treat to see you in person and hang out with you. You make your guests feel like you really care about them.
I do. It was fun. I had a
great time.
Wonderful
gift you have. You really do. I just wanted to thank you for that.
So, all right. You all ready for the holidays?
Absolutely.
What's left?
Absolutely not. But, you know, we forge ahead, and all I can say is keep your chins up, as I try to say about myself, and go forward. You're here for a reason. Look around the room, see why you're here, and try to help somebody, especially in the holidays. Make people laugh. Make people, you know, have some fun.
That's what we're here for, Rich. And we'll be back in a moment with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM.